Stuff Is Reddit podcast.
Marcus Smart is so good. Aiden Brown.
Hello and welcome to the Celtics Reddit podcast presented by CelticsLife.com. My name is Ben Vallis. Thank you for joining us. Hope you're doing well. We've got plenty to get to today. The fallout from the Lakers game. Kemba Walker. Do we keep him? Do we trade him? What's his trade value? Is everyone overreacting? Plus, more trade rumors. JJ Redick is reportedly available. Aaron Gordon has an ankle injury. Are the Magic ready to blow it up? So much to get to. Joining me for all of that and more, Larbird33. Welcome back, sir. How's it going?
Good. Did you buy some GameStop out there, or you're not allowed to do that in Australia?
No, I do have shares on NASDAQ, but I live under a freaking rock apparently, and just completely missed out. And now I'm just kind of watching it, you know, from afar to see how it's all going. What about you?
Oh, you might have been better off sitting it out. I'm either way up or way down to spending, depending on your perspective. I bought it 90 and it's doubled, but it was up like 4x, and by tomorrow it'll probably be all gone. So it's fun though, interesting, definitely educational.
At least you're at the party, right? And no one ever leaves the party feeling good.
Yep.
You feel good while you're at the party. That's what happens. So I'm happy for you. Now, look, before we get into it, well, we are doing a jersey giveaway over on our Twitter page at Celtic Reddit Pod. So head over there, check it out. We're giving away a Jaylen Brown swingman jersey. International entries are welcome, and we'll announce the winner in a little under 2 days' time, about 36 hours. Okay,
you're so generous. You're so generous, Ben.
Oh yeah, right before this,
Ben told me that he was sending me a care package from Australia, and I was like, "That's wow, what a nice guy."
We'll have to wait and see what's included in that care package, but it is not a Jaylen Brown jersey. So if you'd like a Jaylen Brown jersey, Larbird, feel free to enter the competition.
I think I'm excluded, but I did say as a comment that I'm willing to give away a pair of my ball handle gloves, which are of course my used grocery bags. So anyone who wants a pair of those.
That's right.
Sign up.
You want to improve your handle, go check it out. Now, let's start with the Lakers game real quick. It's kind of old news already, a couple of days ago now, so we won't spend too much time on it. But just in general, Larbird, how'd you feel walking away from this one?
Well, walking away from it, I it was mixed feelings, mostly because I was terrified about Marcus Smart. So, but yeah. overall, just looking at the game for what it was, it's pretty good. Like, you know, we lost by 1 point to the defending champions. I'd love to beat the Lakers, of course, but they are the defending champions and they are one of the top records in the NBA. And we played them well with Kemba, you know, going 1-for-12 in the game. So I felt pretty good about it. Both Tatum and Brown played awesome. So overall, you know, we had good performances from Robert Williams in that game. And, you know, there was, you know, honestly, we would have won that game if it hadn't been for, I think, Tyson, Time Lord, giving them 4 points on put back tips.
What are the odds? Right, honestly, so, what are the odds? Someone tell us.
Yeah, that's a big 4 point swing right there. So we would have kicked their ass, right? But overall, yeah. I felt good about it. I know a lot of people, you know, we've lost some games recently. We're only 10-8, but I still feel very positive. We have our two foundational superstars. They played great in that game, and now it's just about figuring out the rest of the roster.
Yeah, that's the thing, like, and something that I think most people should, like, sort of sit back and feel happy and satisfied about is that the Jays, you know, regardless of anything else, regardless of Kemba, definitely regardless of Jeff Teague, Marcus Smart's injury, the Jays are fucking awesome. They're so good. Like, they're both two incredible players, really coming into their own. They're so young. I'm not saying anything that nobody doesn't already know, but they really, really are so awesome. And I think what is so compelling about that is that they kind of continue to exceed expectations. And we sort of set a new ceiling for each of them at the beginning of each season and in their young careers so far. And they continue to bust through that ceiling. So that's what's so exciting about them. They actually scored, each of them, 6 points against or on Anthony Davis at 75% shooting. While guarded by, you know, the Lakers' best defender in Anthony Davis. So they each, you know, took it to AD a few times, scored on him at a high efficiency. So that's really promising. And you mentioned the two tip-ins there, the offensive rebound tip-ins. User JSmart Time Walker posted to Celtics Reddit a slow-mo clip of what was clearly a LeBron James goaltend on Jaylen Brown in the second half, which was called a block. So add it to the sort of the points erroneously awarded to the Lakers. You can add that on there as well. So should have won this game.
Yeah, Ben, you know my feelings on blaming refs. I got in some trouble on Reddit in a recent game where everyone was blaming refs. I'm kind of like morally opposed to blaming the refs. I know that they make bad calls, but I feel like they go both ways. So mm-hmm. I'm not going to necessarily blame that play, but the ones where we tipped in the ball, for sure, that was an obvious 8-point swing right there where we tipped it in accidentally. So we can count those.
Unbelievable. But yeah, main takeaway, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum are both awesome. 58 points between them. They both shot over 65% in this game, which is insane. I feel like Jaylen Brown was getting off to a slow start in that game as well. And I was kind of thinking to myself, all right, like Jaylen's due for a low efficiency game. But then he just apparently made like all of the second half of his shots there. So amazing.
Have we talked about this yet? About who... I saw a post where they were asking which duo in the NBA would you want to build around right now? Like, who would you want long term? And, you know, some people were like, well, Luka Porzingis has kind of slipped at this point and there's concerns about his health. So it's not even Luka and Porzingis anymore. It might actually be Tatum and Brown. And I think if you're looking at right now, Anthony Davis, LeBron James, hard to beat that duo. But if you're talking about age and over the next, 10 plus years, I don't know if there's any duo in the NBA I'd rather have. Like, that alone is just like it's amazing to have those two. Is there anyone that you think competes with them as a potential long-term duo that you'd prefer?
You don't think Westbrook and Beal, hold up to to the Jays there? No, I think you're right. I mean, obviously, very biased Celtics fans here. We're going to lean in the direction of our guys, but top of my head, I can't think of a duo. Maybe like Jokic and Murray. But that's mainly because of Jokic. Like, I could take it or leave it as far as Murray is concerned. And don't let my Nuggets friend hear me say that. I think as far as a duo, they've got everything. And wings are so, so vital in an NBA offense at the moment. I can't think of another wing duo to build around. So, yeah. So, you obviously agree with that, Lubbard?
Yeah, not to sound like, complete homers in this, but yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm usually pretty, if anyone's tuning in for the first time because they want to get a free jersey and they're just seeing what this is all about, I'm usually a lot more level-headed than this. Like, I feel like I take the scowl approach to a certain extent and try to be both sides and not overly biased, but really, I don't know if there's any duo I'd rather have long-term than Brown and Tatum. So, yeah. I mean, it's exciting. It's a great time to be a Celtic fan for sure.
Yeah, love is blind. John Corrales, he tweeted out today, so far this season, the duo of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown have scored 41.6% of Boston's points. That's second only to Lillard and McCollum in Portland, who have scored 42.5% of their team's points. Part of that is because the Jays are really good, but part of that is that not many others are scoring. So, I want to get to the Kemba stuff later in the podcast. So if we can filter the Kemba stuff out for now, that'd be great. But thoughts on, I guess the bench and the rest of the team in this game and perhaps the Spurs game as well, Labert?
Yeah, I mean, we're still waiting for the rest of the roster to kind of assert itself and cement itself. Our core lineup. And there are some contenders that I think are moving up the ranks. And one of them is Peyton Pritchard. I mean, we've talked about him a lot in previous podcasts. He's averaging around 8 points, but in 20 minutes, maybe he grows into a much larger role. Marcus Smart, he's not the most efficient scorer, but he's averaging 13 points. And then Tice is there now averaging around 10. So we do have guys who have solid roles. Robert Williams is moving up as well. I'd love to see him get more minutes because he's putting up amazing stats and he seems to be, from the eye test, really great in 15 minutes a game. So I think all those guys are all really essential next to Brown and Tatum. And of course, we'll talk about Kemba down the line. But yeah, I mean, it does in a little way kind of reminds me of when we had, it's like a much, much greater version of Paul Pierce and Antoine Walker. I mean, you have an offense built around two all NBA players. I mean, that was two all-stars. But yeah, I mean, that's what we're looking at right now. I do think that Kemba's probably going to step into that. We have to assume he's going to step into that third star role, but maybe I'm rambling a little bit about this, but I've talked about this a couple of years ago a lot where we had 10 guys in our, well, actually it was like 11 guys on our roster that could be considered starter level players. You look at that roster, pretty much everyone 1 through 11 is now an NBA starter. And you would think that would work, but it didn't, because you had all these guys that wanted the ball, all these guys that wanted to score, and obviously it caused chemistry issues. Obviously, it was a too many mouse syndrome, which is what I keep calling it, where it's hard for anyone to get in a rhythm. It's hard for them to get comfortable. So then last year, we had four guys. We had four, you know, great all-star level players. And even that, it partially worked because every other game, someone was hurt. You never had all four of them on the court for the most part. It was like Hayward's out, Brown's out, Kemba's out. You only had three. I do think that in an ideal situation, balancing a three-man offense, a three-core guy offense, is the way to go. And I looked at research of this, of just looking at pretty much every champion over the past like 40 years, and almost all of them have been built around only two, maybe three guys that average 10 plus shot attempts. So it's really rare to have shared a wealth type offenses. I know we love the idea of kind of like the shared a wealth, you know, every, you know, kumbaya, and everyone's just going to, you know, participate. But really, it's that's not ever been a key to a success in the NBA. It's always been a superstar dominated league where you have two or three guys. So right now, long way of saying, I'm not totally concerned, because I do think we have the two most important pieces, which is our two all-star, maybe all NBA level guys. And then it's just about how do you fill out the rest of that roster?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And we are going to get to the rest of that roster, namely Kemba and moves available, because this is the goalposts are constantly moving as far as what we can do with the TPE and who's available and what teams will be willing to dance with Danny Ainge in that sense. But in the meantime, in terms of what we have, you mentioned Tyson Williams and their impact, and I guess they're a known commodity, and there's not as much mystique around what they are and what they will be for the team. And user Mr. Fallout Boy writes, I think we found our two big man setup. Tyson Williams played great together, referring to the Lakers game. And like, Tyson's clearly our best big. I think it's safe to say, and Rob Williams bests him in a few categories, but overall, I think Danny T is the man. And like, the Lakers, for example, only out-rebounded us by three boards in that game, which when you consider their size and the dominance of Anthony Davis is pretty incredible when you consider the fact that Tyson got most of the center minutes there. And the two big lineup of Tyson Time Lord was actually really good. And in Corrales's podcast that he put out today, I highly recommend checking that out, because he did a huge deep dive on like stats.nba.com and Cleaning the Glass, just like a quarterly report of the Celtics so far this year. He talked about the reason that Jeff Teague's on-off numbers are so good this year, and it's because apparently he plays the majority of his minutes with both Tatum and Time Lord, who are by far our best two-man lineup. They're actually a plus 32 for this season, and Jeff Teague, numbers-wise, is the beneficiary of that combination. You had Tyson there as well, and I don't know, I almost feel bad for Tristan Thompson. Like, he's almost irrelevant on this team at this point. But I know we talked about this last week, Larbird, but you know, have your thoughts changed or solidified at all as far as Danny T and his role on the team?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think my opinion's evolving on it. I think earlier in the season, it seemed to me that Thompson was going to be our starter big, for better or worse, and that Robert Williams was moving up the ranks, and that would kind of make Daniel Tice the third guy. And it wasn't that Tice was even playing poorly. It was just that it seemed like if we were going to move one of them, considering he was on the final year of his contract, it seemed like he might end up being the chip that we would use to acquire someone. You know, maybe we keep all three of these guys all year. That's totally possible. But I would definitely say that at this point, I've flipped those. I do think that Thompson has sunk down that rotation. He's available to be traded, apparently, as of the 5th. And you know,
right.
He makes about $9 million this year. Next year, he's still a valuable piece for teams. I know we're down on him, but he's still a known commodity around the league, and he still can do things that are positive. You know, good rebounder, solid defender. He should have a value as a piece in a trade. And that's something that, like, I keep thinking about, you know, as we think about the next month or so leading into the trade deadline. I'm at the opinion now of the opinion now that maybe we do keep Tice, and Thompson's the one that we end up moving, if any. But yeah, I guess it's a long way of saying that I do think that I have Tice moved. I have those two kind of those guys flipped. I still am really high on Time Lord, honestly, and I know that's kind of like a meme type thing because it's almost like fans are reluctant to accept that he's a genuine player and he's not getting the minutes to put up those kind of stats. But every time I see him, I'm like, man, he really makes an impact on both ends. He really is a legit player right now. And if you were to tell me at the end of the year he's our starting big and both Tice and Thompson aren't starting, that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, well, they're clearly making Jeff Teague look very good just by being on the court with him at the same time. Him and Time Lord and Tatum, that is. It's incredible. Like, those two on the court together, like, the numbers don't lie there. So, I guess also, as far as the Lakers game, four of our best five lineups in terms of net rating in that game had both Tice and Time Lord on the court at the same time. So, like, perhaps that's the double big lineup reinvented a little bit. And, you know, with Tristan Thompson, yeah, like, he's got a very tradable contract. I guess you definitely have to factor in the idea that he has played such little basketball overall and compared to maybe the rest of the guys on the team in the past 12 months or so. Maybe he needs more time to round into form there, but he certainly, you know, hasn't been as advertised, and therefore at $9 million per year or whatever he's at, like, he's definitely, you know, in top one or two players in terms of, like, let's fucking trade this guy. So we'll see. What else we got here? The Tatum diving out of bounds behind the back lob pass to up the court to a Time Lord jam, like, almost on a trailing Anthony Davis. Where does that rank for you in terms of, like, Jason Tatum's all-time plays so far in his young career?
It's right up there. You know, I don't know if we'll ever top the boomening. Come on. That was incredible. And then, you know, he's had a couple game winners, but as far as just a play in the middle of the game, that was pretty awesome. The whole great sequence. It's definitely up there. Off the top of my head, I can't, you know, remember specifically what I'd rank above it, but it's definitely one of the best ones we've seen of him. It was awesome.
Yeah, I think it's play number two. You know, ranking is obviously a very, very short career so far. He's still so young, but the dunk on LeBron in Game 7, the booming, as you call it, that's definitely play number one. That might remain the leading play in his career for the entirety of his career. I've got this pass, falling out of bounds pass at number two, and then maybe the step back on Paul George in LA last year as number three, because the rest of the, like, the grand Tatum moments, they're more like sequence based. It's more, you know, if you think about the games against the Lakers last year in LA, there was a sequence where Tatum took it to Anthony Davis, you know, on a number of sequential possessions, and that was great, but it's not really like a classified as a moment, so to speak. So
right.
in the ranking of moments, I think this ranks at number two. But, you know, the Celtics fans, like, sit back, where, you know, we've got at least, you know, 5 or so years of Tatum moments to come. So it'll be interesting to revisit this ranking system as time goes on.
That's definitely a tippy top, and then all the way on the bottom is probably when he got blocked by Bam. That was the worst.
Yeah. And meanwhile, it's probably number one for Bam. But
apparently they have a poster of it. I read they had a poster of it that they have in a son of a bitches. But
I read that too. That makes me
I don't know why I felt the need to bring that up, but
I'm gonna sip on my whiskey right now.
I felt like we were being too positive, Bam. We were being too positive. Let's talk about how you got blocked in a pivotal moment.
No, that's good. Yeah. You gotta bring us back down to earth. And we'll continue in that direction by talking about the Marcus Smart injury. Fortunately, strained calf, could have been an Achilles, but it turns out his Achilles heel is actually his calf muscle. He's out for 2-ish weeks, maybe 3 weeks. But a user, I'm going to fail here by not bringing up this post in advance. I've got it right here. The starting lineup with Marcus Smart out. This is posted by user RizQZ1. Okay, guys, with Smart missing 2 weeks, who do you think will be starting? Who do you think we will be starting? Will the double big start again, or will Grant / Semi be thrown in with Jemba and Tice? I think he means Kemba and Tice. And a couple of asterisks here. Pritchard out for a week or so. Obviously, Romeo Langford is out as well. So, Larbird, with Smart out, you know, over the next couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, who do you think is going to be the starting lineup for the Celtics going forward?
Well, clearly it's going to be the player that everyone wants it to be, Jeff Teague. It's going to be Jeff Teague, probably. I, I made a comment in that thread, and then I realized the top comment was my comment. I wanted to be Aaron Nesmith. Like, just put him out there. Let's come on, trial by fire. Let's make it happen.
I agree. That's the 2K solution, right? Just throw him out there, right, see what happens.
Just do it.
Yeah,
just increase his rating, man. Just keep throwing the ball until he starts making them. It's going to happen. It's hard to say. Maybe we go back to a double big. You know, maybe we'll have a triple big lineup. Who knows? Yeah, you can never count out Brad to have something that's going to be completely unexpected. But it's probably just going to be Teague.
Yeah, which is terrifying. And I, you know, it's so crazy. Like, yeah, at the beginning of the season, once they made the trade, or the rather the signing of Jeff Teague, you know, those reports of like the Brad Stevens has always coveted Jeff Teague over all these years, like including up until now, which is bizarre given his stint in Minnesota. Surely we can all hope that he's kind of having this realization along with the rest of us that like the guy is well over the hill and is only playable in spot minutes, if that. I don't know, like, do you really think that Jeff Teague is going to actually partake in the starting lineup going forward for the next 2 weeks?
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be my top choice, but I just think that Brad seems to lead towards giving vets that kind of role. It really is interesting because we're still kind of trying to figure out what happens when Kemba is 100%. Does that mean that he's going to permanently start next to Smart? Or are we going to move Smart back into a reserve guard role like he had for, you know, the bulk of last year? And this is something I haven't done a lot of research on, about whether or not Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown play better. So, you know, Brown can play shooting guard, small forward. Tatum can play small forward, you know, power forward. It doesn't make much of a difference in terms of their success if they're playing one position or another. That's something I haven't like looked at the plus minus, you know, different lineup configurations to determine it. Should have done that beforehand. But I do wonder if that influences it. If it's like we really should put another guard next to Kemba, or do we just slide over Brown into shooting guard and then look to bring in someone like Grant Williams or Shemi? Those would be the two guys that I think would be most likely to step into a starting lineup. Unless Brad grows some balls and just puts Nesmith out there, which he should totally do.
Yeah, I mean, Nesmith is, you know, it's theoretically the right choice, right? And that, you know, if you have got Nesmith out there with Kemba, who also in theory should be ramping up to his previous form, Jaylen Brown, Tatum, who are awesome perimeter shooters, and Tyus, who has been great from spot up three, you know, in the last five games or so, in theory, that would generate a lot of open shots for Nesmith. But also in theory, he should have been able to hit all the open shots he's had so far this season, and he really hasn't. So I think that sways Brad Stevens' decision a little bit. I feel like maybe with that said, the more logical choice is Semi Ojeleye, which makes a lot of sense from a defensive perspective. He's really increased his 3-point percentage, you know, as of the beginning of this season, and has kind of earned it a little bit. And, you know, if you think about locker room chemistry and things like that, you can see that sort of rattling Shemmy a little bit if they just go ahead and award that new starting position to Nesmith. So I feel like maybe Shemmy's a little bit more deserved in that sense. But, you know, we're going to see tomorrow, right?
Yeah, and Grant Williams is a good candidate, too. He started four games for us this season, and he's shooting 41% from three. I mean, on less shy attempts than Shemmy. But yeah, I would think it probably comes down to Teague, Shemmy, or, you know, maybe anyone else on the roster. Who knows?
Yeah. Or anyone else. Yeah, look, if it's Teague, God help us.
Taco Fall. Suddenly Taco Fall is starting. Who knows?
Yeah, start him at the two. Honestly, anyone but Jeff Teague, right? Like, I don't know. It's actually, this could be a very revealing stretch in terms of where Brad Stevens is at with his idea of Jeff Teague and whether or not he's sort of come to and had a realization, an epiphany, if you will, as to who Jeff Teague is nowadays in 2021. So we'll see. The game's tomorrow, so we're going to find out. We're going to move on to Kemba Walker. And, wow, there's a lot going on with Kemba Walker on Celtics Reddit and on Twitter and everywhere. I'm going to start with a couple of comments from the Next Day thread. This is the thread the day after the Lakers game. So user Beamslock writes, "Some of you really need to chill." This is coming after a lot of Kemba crossfire. "Kemba hasn't been great so far this season, and criticism is warranted. However, the vitriol and hate that some of you display is pretty disgusting. Please calm down." And then in reply to that, user Traditional Liars writes, "I like Kemba as a person. I've followed him since college. The eye test says that he does not fit with the Jays or Smart at all. He can't score readily enough to warrant the lack of defense. In fact, there's been so many posts about Kemba in the last 36 hours on Celtics Reddit, Twitter, and otherwise. So rather than us just spitball about Kemba, I'm just going to rattle off some of these posts, and Larbird, we want your quick-ish reactions to them. Like, feel free to go in deep on any of these, but we've got about sort of 6 or 7 of these, so we're going to go through them pretty quickly. So the first one is by user Taco the Great Third, who writes, "Do you think we should trade Kemba? This post, I should say, is downvoted to 0. Larbird, do you think we should trade Kemba?"
So this is tough. I'm gonna respond to all of these, but let's just say that I have maybe 3 takes on this that all sound conflicting. But off the bat, to that one, I've felt like we should be considering trading him for, you know, even before I even knew that he had issues with his knees and he was still playing at an all-star level. And the reason is not because of his performance. I think he's a great player. It's not because of his personality. I think he's an awesome fit. It's more just about looking at what this roster should be around Brown and Tatum. Those are the guys that should be our primary ball handlers at this point and our creators. And so what is an ideal fit next to them? So, I could go a little bit deeper into that, but I want to hear some of the other questions.
Sure. Well, just for the record, the votes currently, the no's have it 190 to 128. The majority of the voters so far don't want to trade Kemba Walker, which is fair enough. So the next post is by PP is King. We just can't trade Kemba Walker at the moment. And they go on to say, even if there was a trade on the table, it would be a salary dump type deal, including assets needed for us to use the TPE. I do think we should consider trading him for the right return, but that's just not possible right now. So bringing Kemba Walker down and acting like he's a bum makes us look like a piece of shit fan base that treats its players horribly. Larbird, your thoughts?
So maybe this is the alternate take that I have on this that sounds conflicting, but I think we're overreacting. I think Kemba's going to be fine. I mean, Joe on our podcast would strongly disagree with me, so it's too bad he's not in here. But I think he's going to be fine. I think it's early. He's just still rounding into form. His shot's not great, but the main thing is we haven't heard anything about him experiencing any pain or soreness, and maybe he is, and we're just not hearing about it, but... Mostly, I just think that he's just rusty. It's probably just getting his legs under him, getting used to the flow of the game. He's still on a minutes restriction, and it happens, man. You have bad games. Maybe he'll come out tomorrow and shoot lights out, and everyone will be saying, oh my God, how could you possibly consider trading Kemba? He's a star. I mean, that's just the nature of being a fan of any team. We're reactionary, and right now, because he's coming off a bad game against the Lakers, everyone's acting like he's complete trash. Give him a couple weeks, and if he's playing well, I think you could probably get something for him. Who wouldn't want an all-star? I mean, we talked about this where it's like, you know, Gordon Hayward got $120 million and people were acting like his career was over. Obviously, teams out there will value your players in a different way. And he doesn't have a ton of years left on his contract. He's not like he's coming off of a catastrophic injury where he's like, you know, his foot fell off or something. He is dealing with knee, you know, issues, but overall, he's still a great player, and there's teams out there that need point guards, so I think you probably could get something for him, and not just a pure salary dump. Sorry, yeah, I'm supposed to give you quick answers, you know?
No, relatively quick. Yeah, and look, there's only 2 of us on the pod tonight, so we can afford the longer takes. That's good. Well, let's move on to a post by user DeadAssMF, who writes, "Why I think the Celtics should trade Kemba Walker." He goes on to write, "Because some of you bum-ass fans don't deserve him." I obviously know this isn't all of you, but holy fuck, the negativity of a lot of Celtics fans is incredibly jarring. I'm not going to read the rest of the post, the rest of the post, but you get the gist. So maybe, Larbird, your thoughts on like the hysteria on Celtics Reddit and Twitter with regards to Kemba Walker at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, we see it, you can recognize it with any player when they perform poorly. You know, even Jason Tatum will have a bad game and people will act like he's trash again. Yeah. It doesn't make sense to me. It's just like, yeah, obviously we have reasons to be concerned about Kemba's, health, whether or not that tendonitis is going to be a chronic thing. But yeah, that, you know, that magical stem cell injection that's supposed to have built up cartilage. So maybe he's fine. I just still think you give him time. It's going to take a little time. I mean, I remember Kyrie coming back and having a game like that. And people were like, oh my God, Kyrie's done.
Yeah.
maybe it's a bad example to bring up Kyrie, but I mean, the point I'm trying to make is, you know, Kyrie ended up being an all NBA player that year. And it's the same thing, like, just give Kemba a little time, should be fine. I do think fans are reactionary. It's just the nature of it. They're going to overreact to things. That's how it is.
Yeah, it's part of the passion of fandom, right? So the only thing I would add to that is there's no right or wrong answers here, right? Like, there's no right or wrong opinions. It's just how we feel in our pursuit of fandom and passion and love for this team, right? And, you know, I got in a Twitter exchange today where, like, all I kind of did was post some hypotheticals about, you know, if we were to consider trading Kemba Walker, would his trade value be higher now than it would be down the line, or vice versa? And there are some responses like, basically, you know, not verbatim, but how dare you? It would be stupid to trade Kemba. The optics would be bad. It's like, come on, dude. I'm not even saying we should trade Kemba. I love Kemba Walker, but I'm just talking hypotheticals and options, and people kind of lose their minds, which is fine. The point is to say that it's all good. You know, like, we're just talking about options, right? We're just spitballing here. We're going to move on. This is a post by user Jason Tatum for MVP, who writes, "The Kemba Walker slander needs to stop," in capital letters. They go on to say, "Yes, I agree. Kemba shot poorly yesterday in the Lakers game and probably cost us the game, but he's still our guy. Kemba bleeds green and gives it his all every time he steps on the court. I'm proud he's a Celtic." I don't know how I expect you to react to this one, Larbird, based on the posts we've talked about so far, but anything to add to this at all? Are Celtics Reddit fans okay to continue slandering Kemba Walker?
I wouldn't say slandering. I do think there's more to the idea that, and again, this is why it seems like I'm maybe playing both sides, because I've been on board with the idea of trading Kemba for a right return for a while. And, you know, you and I had arguments about this, or not arguments, but we had debates about this, about whether or not...
Gentlemanly discussions.
whether or not that would just, like, the whole idea that it would kill our ability to sign free agents, and I don't agree. I just don't believe that's true. I think, and that's why I wrote this larger post on Reddit, where it's like, this is very much where we are right now. It's very much where we would have been had we kept Isaiah and not traded him after that great, amazing All-NBA season he had.
Yeah.
Because Isaiah would have showed up and he would have played poorly, because he played poorly in Cleveland and Los Angeles that year. And the fan base would have turned on him. And they would
Denver.
Have said,
sorry.
Yeah, right. He moved around quite a bit. But yeah, I mean, listen, I love Isaiah, but the fans would have turned on him very quickly within the first five or six games. He played about 30 games that year and they were all pretty bad. So the fans would have turned on him and then they would have said, get rid of him, get rid of him. And you know what? We wouldn't have got a Kyrie Irving in return. We would have got nothing. So yeah, that's part of my feelings, is that I've been on board with trading him, and it's more about fit. I don't think that he's a bad player. I do think that he might end up proving all of us wrong and coming out and being an amazing third option. But for all the reasons that so it's complicated, because I do think there's people who are saying we should trade him because he's not an ideal third option. It should be someone who can spread the floor and is great as a kickout option, and also someone who's very strong defensively. This is all the stuff I was saying last year before anyone wanted to trade him. So I agree with that. I agree with that whole sentiment. And I don't agree with the idea that he's washed up. I had a thought about this that I can share.
Please.
It was some comment that I made, and it feels, again, maybe this is our Homer episode, because I have been saying a lot of things that seem very Homerish, but I was thinking about the funny thing is, I had this thought when we signed Tristan Thompson, because they were saying he was our poor man's Dennis Rodman. And I'm like, you know what? It almost like we are trying to build this team in the image of the 96 Bulls. And I know it sounds ridiculous, but listen, Jordan, Pippen, great, amazing players. The greatest player of all time, potentially, alongside Pippen, who was awesome as well. But it almost is like a poor man's version of that. And it's similar to what the Clippers are doing, where they have Kawhi and they have George. We have Tatum and Brown. Those are our two guys. And then you surround them, for us, you know, the idea of bringing in a Tristan Thompson, who's like our poor man's Rodman, makes sense. You know, maybe Tice is our Luke Longley. Maybe Peyton Pritchard is our Steve Kerr off the bench. You know, all that makes sense. And then, you know, maybe Marcus Smart is our Ron Harper. But then the main question is, would you have wanted on the 96 Bulls, would you have wanted another ball dominant guard who plays poor defense? Or does it make more sense to have like a Kukoc, someone who's out there, who solid overall player, spreads the floor? And that's kind of when that's been my thought about the Kemba thing all along. It's like, if you have these two all NBA guys, Would I rather have a Kemba or would I rather have a Kukoc type guy? And that's why I can't disagree with the guys who are saying that we should consider trading him. But I do disagree with the guys who are saying that he's done, because it doesn't necessarily mean he's bad, just maybe not the greatest fit right now.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's almost like duos are the new trios, right? Like, it seems to be sort of an echoing sentiment around the league with some of the comps you use there. You know, you mentioned Kawhi and Paul George, and obviously there's LeBron and AD. I'm just trying to think off the top of my head, like, who's the Kemba Walker equivalent for MJ and Scotty there in the 90s? Like, if you added like Isaiah Ryder or like Mario Elie or someone right. like that to the Bulls 96 team, like, are they impactful? Probably not.
And not necessarily, right? Like, do you want to take the ball out of Michael Jordan, out of his hands? No, probably not. You probably want your best player to have it. And that's not to say that I'm saying Jason Tatum is on the level of a Jordan or Jaylen Brown's on the level of a Jordan. But it is kind of like a small version of that. Like,
at least 50% of listeners are furious at this moment.
Yeah, at least.
Which is fine.
But it's like the same thing I was saying. Like, 2 years ago, we had 11 guys. Last year, we had 4 guys. Now we have 2 guys. That makes sense. It's just about who do you surround him with? And I'm not sure if a ball dominant guard is the best option there.
Yeah, so that begs the question, who is our Tony Kukoc? And we're going to get to that in a segment or two's time. But continuing with the Kemba Walker's posts, so this is posted by Agitated Phrase. Kemba Walker's stats over the last calendar year. So January 30th, 2020 to August 11th, 2020, a 16-game stretch. His stats, 15.5 points per game on 51.6 true shooting. Then 2020 NBA playoffs round one, so 4 games. 24.3 points per game on 62% true shooting. The rest of the 2020 NBA playoffs, 13 games, 18.2 points per game on 55% true shooting. And now the 2021 NBA regular season, 6 games, 14.3 points per game on 48.2% true shooting. And he goes on to say, to everyone who keeps saying Kemba's only been back for 6 games, of course he's struggling. Kemba has been horrible for the past year outside of a 1-4 game stretch in the playoffs. Do you think there's any substance to that, Larbird, or is this just the natural swing of things? Should we expect an upward swing soon with Kemba's stats here?
I mean, I that's hard because I think Kemba is a legitimate all-star, and he made major improvements later in his career on Charlotte, and we saw that last year as well. But he is a career 42% shooter. And then from three, he's a career, 35% shooter. So, I mean, if you're looking at his shooting percentages right now, which aren't great, I don't know if that's like, it's almost like I kind of expected that. It was, he's not the most efficient player in the world. He's not the most efficient shooter. So I'm not expecting him to come out of the gate ever and shoot, 50% from the field and, 44% from three. He's never really done that. He's never shot over 40% from three in his career. That's not who he is. He's great at getting to the line. He's great at attacking the basket. He's got strengths, and he's still probably getting rounding into shape right now. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's almost like I'm trying to say that he's overrated, but and he kind of was. He kind of was always a little bit overrated. Like I thought he was like 70% of what Kyrie was, but you get none of the drama, which evens it out, which is great. And that's what we needed at the time. I mean, that's what we needed. We needed someone who's going to step into that role. But now with the ascension of Tatum and Brown as like legitimate superstar level, not quite superstar, but all NBA level talents, that's not necessarily what you want. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like you kind of touched on it there, but this user's not factoring in like the correlation of the downward trend of Kemba's stats and the upward trend of the Jays. And totally. It's interesting, you mentioned the Kyrie everything there. Like, you're bringing Kemba Walker, and yes, you could factor in age and career length so far, but there has to be some contribution as far as Kemba's presence on the team, chemistry-wise, and the upward trend in the Jays' contribution and stats and overall quality as players and people, it seems. You could say that there's been a lot of impact and a lot of benefit and contribution from Kemba just in his presence on the team overall. So, I don't know, I wouldn't read in too much to the downward trend of his stats there, because I think he's contributing to a lot more of the success of other components of the team.
Yeah, I mean, you can see that when he first showed up in Boston, and where he was supposed to be essentially taking Kyrie's role, he came out of the, you know, out of the gate taking about 19, 20 shots per night, which is what Kyrie did. And then over the course of the season, by the end of the season, you know, he was taking, I think post All-Star, he averaged about 11.6 shots per game, which makes sense. I mean, we had all these other guys stepping up. Hayward was actually greatly improved. We had Kemba, Tatum and Brown greatly improved. So yeah, I mean, I do think you're right. Totally right. That's the reason for that regression in stats, is that we had other guys who were better, who were stepping up. It made more sense to have the ball in their hands.
Yeah, and hopefully as well, that's indicative of his, Kemba's ability to an acceptance of taking a lesser role and being the third quote unquote star on this team, and, you know, taking a backseat to the Jays. You know, statistically he did it, you know, like you said, Larbird, towards the end of last season. Hopefully he can settle, you know, back into that role again, and we can start to find some traction and identity as a team and in a roster. One more post on Kemba. There's been so many. This is the last one that I found today, posted by user, "My PP is so big." I'm sorry, I had to say that out loud. They wrote Kenna, which I think is Kemba autocorrected. Kemba would be a better fit coming off the bench. They go on to say, let the Jays start and be the cooks in the kitchen. They say Kenner again. It's brutal. It must have been posted on their phone. Kemba should be the bench point guard who can score when the second team needs points. I don't expect you to spend a lot of time on this one, Larbird, but thoughts on Kemba Walker off the bench?
I just think it's funny that, I mean, it's pretty common where I'll have takes that seem flaming hot and ridiculous,
yeah,
and then a year later they become trending. That was my take last year. I was like, I mentioned multiple times, I'm like, you have a guy who's making over $30 million. It doesn't really make sense to bring him off the bench from a financial perspective, but I was really in favor of the Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Gordon Hayward, and then Tice lineup. I'd like the idea of having those five, and then Kemba off the bench as a microwave. I was like, that might be interesting to try it. And of course, I mean, the idea of signing a star and then bringing him off the bench is met with a lot of disdain. But I don't know. I think it'd be worth to try it right now. But unfortunately, right now, we don't have a four all-star team. So we don't have a Gordon Hayward. We don't have all these other guys who makes... We're still trying to figure out who's going to start next to Kemba with him in the lineup. So as of right now, I wouldn't say... For now, at least, it doesn't make any sense to bring Kemba off the bench, because then who are you starting?
Exactly.
You're going to start... Pritchard's out right now. You're going to start Tremont Waters or something. I mean, it wouldn't make no sense. So,
yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. User DeFantom Menace Leica writes, "Can we spell the guy's name right, please? Like, it's sort of a bare minimum." He spelled Kenna twice in this one post. So I'm going to, you know, throw out some forgiveness there, assuming that that's like some sort of mobile platform autocorrection. Maybe they wrote it while they were driving or something like that. I don't know. But
a lot of new PP accounts, you know? A lot of people love the Paul Pierce. Peyton Pritchard. A lot of new PP accounts, though.
So. Yeah, you're right. Well, it's certainly not like a 15-year-old PP is so big account. So clearly there's some Peyton Pritchard fandom there. Let's move on to... I've listed the segment as potential trades. It doesn't have to be potential trades. It could be trade rumors or... you take it how you will, but let's start with the fact that Aaron Gordon out with a severe left ankle sprain. Larbo, does this finally force the Magic to blow it up? I know they've got some pieces there that you're interested in. Does this change things as far as what you expect from Danny Ainge, the TPE, and the Magic's involvement?
Yeah, a lot of people have brought them up as a potential trade partner, either through the TPE. I mean, we talked about it also, just like spitballing ideas of who would go after Kemba. They don't really have a starting point guard. But yeah, if they're rebuilding, then I don't know why they'd really want Kemba. So there's a couple guys in that team. Evan Fournier, it's interesting. Terrence Ross has an interesting bench piece. You could probably get both of those guys, and I think you could get both of those guys and still be under a TP. I haven't looked at their contracts for a bit, but yeah, I mean, I think they are an interesting trade partner. I actually, how long is Gordon supposed to be out for? Did they mention that?
Up to 6 weeks, I believe.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's probably going to, I mean, I think they're already out of the playoff picture.
They're fucked. They're absolutely fucked. Yeah. To put it professionally. Sorry. Go on.
So some interesting, yeah, there's interesting pieces there. Lots of interesting pieces. Like even like, Mo Bamba, if we didn't have Time Lord, I'd be interested in trying to buy low on him. That's an interesting player. But yeah, they're a team that has come up. I guess the main hope is, I guess the long shot is if they try to move Vucevic, who's 30 years old now, great player. We talked about him last podcast, but would they at some point just say, fuck it, let's just get some picks and let's get some pieces, and we're never gonna win a title with this guy. Why hold on to a guy in his 30s and get a few more years out of him? So, I mean, they could either go after Kemba and try to have those two paired together and go for something. What they would go for, I have no idea. Or maybe it makes more sense to just trade Vucevic and try to get some young pieces.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn on Vucevic because he's kind of like an enhanced Tice in a sense. And one thing we talked about in terms of the benefit of Tice last week is that no one can guard Joel Embiid, but Tice can at least stretch the floor and bring him out of the paint and maybe fatigue him a little bit. And Vucevic is like the ultimate version of that big man archetype. You know, pretty good percentage from three. Obviously a very good player and the top contributor and scorer for the Magic. I just worry about how much we'd have to give up for him in terms of not only picks, chipping way into our TPE and potentially young talent as well. I don't know. I'm not offering an alternative here, but do you worry at all that with Vucevic that we'd be giving up too much in that potential trade?
Well, I gotta admit that I'll admit up front that my fandom of the rest of the league is much much smaller than my fandom of the Celtics. So I don't spend a whole lot of time watching these guys very clearly. You know, there are some podcasters out there who know the team, you know, the whole league intimately, and that's not me. I'm fully invested in the Celtics, so I haven't watched them too much, but I did think it was interesting. I was looking at because we were talking about Andre Drummond a couple weeks ago and how, you know, some fans wanted a big guy just to kind of deal with the Joel Embiids of the world. But if you looked at his stats in matchups with Embiid, Drummond was dominated by Embiid. I thought it was interesting looking at Vucevic versus Embiid. I looked at that and I was like, wow, if you're just going off of that, it almost like they played each other pretty even. And almost like Vucevic actually, in those games, at least if you're just going off the stats, Embiid didn't really have amazing games against him. I don't know if there's anything much to that because I haven't really watched him defensively against Embiid. I'm not watching those games. But it's probably a long shot. But if Orlando is blowing it up, I don't know why they would keep him. He's in his 30s now. What's the point? What are you trying to accomplish?
Yeah, well, the other players' names that come up pretty frequently in Magic talks, and especially now with this injury, Evan Fournier and Terrence Ross. Do you see any added incentive for Danny Ainge to trade for those guys or at least make a call?
I think they're totally, I kind of mentioned him a second ago, but yeah, I think Fournier is a perfect example of someone you could probably get right now with a TPE. He's on the final year of his deal. I seriously doubt he's staying there long term. There was already rumors about them shopping him and that they don't expect to keep him. I think he's a perfect example of someone who you could add, could upgrade this team. But again, I almost feel like the Celtics are still trying to figure out what their best option is. It is kind of a bummer because this is going to sound stupid, but Romeo Langford, I really curious what he is. You know, I we haven't seen him. And if Romeo is that guy that could step in and play a key role, then do you really want to have a Fournier? I mean, does he make sense? Again, that sounds stupid because we haven't seen him at all, but there's still question marks about us. And so the next month or so is where we hope to at least spend the next 4 or 5 weeks trying to figure out what those answers are. And then the Fourniers of the world are still probably going to be available. So you don't have to jump at a Harrison Barnes or a Fournier yet.
Yeah, his value is static, whereas it's constantly shifting, or it stands to shift with Romeo Langford. Any idea when he's coming back? Because I know that the trade deadline is the 25th of March, and I feel like Langford is due back before then, and you know, perhaps Leo, we can showcase him a little bit to, you know, not to just to ourselves but to other teams as well before that deadline, you know, passes. Do you know when he's due back at all?
There was a thread asking for an update, and nobody really knows right now. The only thing I saw was that I think he was supposed to be coming back in the early part of February, but there hasn't been any kind of news about him. Usually, you'll see something where they say he's started practicing with the team. And then when you see that, you know that he's just around the corner. We haven't seen that yet. So unfortunately, it seems like we might be waiting for a little bit longer.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what about this? Shams Charania posted sources. The Pelicans are focusing on Northeast teams. We're part of an exclusive club here. So the 76ers, the Nets, the Celtics as potential trade destinations for 15-year, 36-year-old veteran JJ Redick. Thoughts on this? Is he a worthwhile acquisition for the Seas?
He's always been a really great player. And yeah, this is kind of similar to that. When, you know, offseason, I was talking about it would be great to surround Tatum and Brown with elite 3-point shooters. And the two guys that I was that I mentioned that I didn't think were potentially movable were JJ Redick and Seth Curry. And Seth Curry's already been traded. He's making a huge impact on the Suns, on the Sixers. And now we're seeing Redick is probably going to be moved as well. But unfortunately, Redick has not looked good at all this year. He's not shot well. And the more unfortunate thing is his contract. I think he makes about, is he making $12 million this year?
$13 million. 13? Which is exactly $11 million more than Wayne Ellington. Just putting that out there. Sorry.
So I guess you could use a TPE to get him. Again, another probably easy option of acquiring him with a late first or something.
Yeah.
But I don't love it. You know, I honestly don't love it because he's not playing that great. He is 36 and unless you're hoping that he's going to show up and start shooting lights out again. I don't know if guard is really the main thing we need right now. I almost feel like we need another 3-and-D type player.
Yeah, and, completely agree. Yeah. Yeah. So with that said, like, have you mentally, and we talk about this every week, but have you mentally pivoted at all in terms of how you'd like to see the TPE used? Are there, you know, because the landscape is shifting constantly, are there any new player names that have come up or player names that we've discussed already that have kind of been reiterated in your mind as someone that you'd really like to go after with this TPE?
Well, it's going to be sad to say, but not really. I mean, I haven't. There's no one that's really stood out yet that I'm like, oh, geez, we have to go all in. I still think this is a decision that Ainge probably makes closer to a trade-led deadline, if not just waiting all the way until next offseason. Because, I mean, it does that. It still has a lot of power next offseason because I think with the timing of it, you're actually able to use it during draft time and everything because of how when we actually use it. But yes, yeah, so far, nothing. I mean, I think they're all intriguing names, but they're all the same intriguing names that we probably outlined before the season started. They're all the same guys. You're talking about Harrison Barnes and the, you know, the Fourniers of the world and, you know, Buddy Hield, maybe he's an option. Like there's all sorts of guys that we talked about that are still probably the same dudes that we might consider.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a post to that effect by user LightningFast31 who writes, who do y'all want to improve this team? I'm not going to read the full post, but it's there on Celtics Reddit. I highly recommend checking it out because the comment section, as well as Lightning Fast's, the own propositions, so very intriguing. But there is one user, MLS Analyst, who writes, we should use the Cantor traded player exception. So not even the Hayward traded player exception on Wayne Ellington or Ben McLemore, both veteran shooters. I think that's a really interesting proposition in that we're not even chipping into our and obviously we can't combine those two TPEs either. So it's, I don't know, it's one choice doesn't impact the other. But I think getting either one of those guys, particularly from Detroit, who like, you know, they're not making the play-in tournament, they're not making anything. So really they've got an incentive to trade away these guys for, you know, Ellington's on a vet minimum. Trade him away for picks. We can make a better use of him. I feel like it's a win-win situation there. So I'm very, very high on MLS analyst's suggestion there.
I always liked Ben McLemore too. Off the top of your head, do you know what he's making?
I can find out very quickly, thanks to Google. Ben McLemore contract. He's on a 2-year, $4.3 million contract. So he's averaging $2.15 million per year.
He's one of those guys that I felt like he had so much potential and didn't quite get there. And maybe had he not been drafted by the Kings and went to a different team like the Celtics, maybe he would have got there. Mm-hmm. At this point, you know, he is just what he is, which is a solid role player shooter. I like him. The only thing I would caution is that if you do that, you're limiting even more so how much space you have under our hard cap, which I think is around 23 million, 22 million.
Yeah.
You bring in a player like that, then it makes it even more challenging to go after a big name with that full Big Daddy TPE that we have. But it's fair to mention that, you know, if we're moving Thompson in the deal and Teague in the deal, I mean, that's $10 million that we can ship out as part of his deal. And
huh, please,
maybe
God,
that doesn't matter so much. Yeah, right. So maybe that doesn't matter so much.
That's insanely right. Good.
Right.
Amazing. And then, you know, Thompson's gone. Grant Williams is our third string center. I'm completely okay with that. Wow, I'm fantasizing now, Larbird. That's it's amazing. Look, we're almost ready to wrap this one up here. We're just going to get to, in terms of the week ahead, a post by user ACAT20 who writes, how will the Celtics go in this 5-game road trip? And they've surveyed the community on what our record will be on this trip. So just to give you an idea, Larbird, we've got Golden State on Tuesday, Sacramento the day after on Wednesday, Clippers on Friday, the Suns on Sunday, funnily enough, and Utah on Tuesday, who have been great. That's 5 games in 8 days and no Marcus Smart. So record-wise, out of those 5 games, how do you predict the Celtics doing in this upcoming stretch?
We're going to win them all. I don't know. It's probably going to be hit and miss, I would think. I'll be honest, as you were talking, I was just thinking, I didn't get all the names because I was thinking, is there anyone else that I haven't mentioned? This is random. Again, it's our previous conversation we're just having. I wonder, how do you feel about Davis Bertans? Because, the Wizards are completely imploding. He makes about $16 million. Is that someone you're interested in, or is that not really something that intrigues you?
Yes. I mean, no one on the Wizards, aside from Brad Beal, has been particularly good this year, but Bertans at $16 million, it's a huge chunk of the TPE, which we could use in the offseason. I don't know. I just don't see that moving the needle as far as, okay, that's going to move us from a, second, maybe third round exit team to a finals team, which is what we're looking for.
Right.
But then again, the TPE does have an expiry date, and it comes down to who's available. And if Bertans is the best player available, then obviously we're okay with it, right? So, he's a bigger guy. He can play a stretch four. He obviously is a knockdown three-point shooter, and we're looking for kick-out options for the Jays and for Kemba. I don't know. Maybe I'm talking myself into it. I don't know. I don't mind it.
All right, just that gave me enough time to look up the schedule again because I wasn't listening to you.
Great. But,
it's
mutually
Clippers
beneficial.
Are gonna be tough. Clippers. I think maybe we go 3-2 in those games. Honestly, there's some tough teams. Clippers can probably beat us, but and the Jazz are gonna be tough, and the Warriors are still very tough. But I think we can go 3-2 in those games.
Yeah, look, I got to tell you, I think we're gonna have a podcast or two in before this happens, but we do have a game against the Denver Nuggets coming up. And look, if you've listened to this podcast for any amount of time, you'll know my best mate Dice is a huge, huge Nuggets fan. Even to today, he's like messaging me about Jokic, how he's the best, fuck Jason Tatum, fuck Jaylen Brown. Why would you care about those guys when we've got a guy like Nikola Jokic out there? These are the kinds of messages I'm receiving on a daily basis. I don't know why I bring this up. I just want the people to know that this is what I'm copping on a day-to-day basis. And the anxiety is starting to build within me with regards to this Nuggets game. So if there's one thing I can ask of the listeners.
How did he become a Nugget? He's an Australian as well? He just happens to be a Nuggets fan?
Yeah, so I guess he started following the NBA in like 2008 when Allen Iverson and Carmelo Anthony were both Nuggets. And, that was a pretty enticing time to join the Nuggets bandwagon. And he's been on them ever since. So, he certainly wasn't a Dikembe Mutombo fan back in the 90s. But if I'm asking one thing of the people out there, it's just to like put out your positive energy now, start to build some momentum there such that we win this game, because my life in terms of its worth continuing to live will significantly decrease if the Nuggets beat us in this game. That's not hyperbole. Anyway,
I just want to say real quick that my cousin Brendan, he lives in, lived in Lynn, Massachusetts his entire life, still lives there. And inexplicably, for some reason, he grew up a huge San Antonio Spurs fan. It never made sense to me. I'm like, everyone else in the family is huge Celtics fans. And he just grew up loving David Robinson and loving Tim Duncan. And I'm like, how the hell did you end up being a huge Spurs fan? And then I finally like was looking through a photo album and I saw this photo of us playing on an old, it was like an old like hoop when we were probably like 2 or 3. It's like kids' little hoop that they gave us with like a bright pink Spurs ball and David David Robinson's face on the backboard. And I'm like, that's it. That's it. He grew up playing with this damn basketball hoop. So I have a nephew now through marriage, and I'm trying to brainwash him into being a Celtic fan by getting him a hoop that's all Celtic stuff because he lives in Seattle. So I'm just like, we got to put the stickers of Celtics on there. He's got to be growing, you know, better be growing up a Celtics fan or else, you know, I'll be failing.
Well, look, create him a Twitter account and enter him in the Jaylen Brown jersey giveaway. Right. Maybe that's how we can sway him in this direction. That's at Celtics Reddit Pod if you're in case you're listening still. All right. So just to get back to the five-game road trip coming up there, the prevailing vote on that post by user ACAT20 is that the Celtics will go 3-2, which I think without Marcus Smart, without Peyton Pritchard, and with Kemba still rounding back into form, hopefully, probably a realistic take. But I stand with you, Larbird, 5-0, right? That's how it's going to go.
Yep.
All right, that's going to do it for this one. We are planning to be back later this week after the Kings game, depending on our availability and whatnot. But if not, we'll definitely see you at the usual time next week. I'm excited for the Celts to right the ship and correct the narrative this week, though a little nervous without Marcus Smart. So we'll see how that goes. Larbird33, love your work, sir. Thanks for all that you do. Talk to you soon.
All right, bye GameStop. Just kidding.
All right, folks.
Bye-bye.
Until next time. Go Celtics. Peace.